There's something very powerful about putting a seed in the ground and following it throughout the season, and then at the end of the season having something. It's like, oh, I help nature.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time.
I'm flattered you want me to. Anytime.
I'm super happy. And I'm in the habit of always asking my guests, where are you coming? Are you in Sonoma today?
Napa. We just bought a historical building right downtown, and we've just moved in. So I'm a little discombobulated here, but downtown Napa, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so you're coming to Rancho La Puerta on August 1st, and we're excited to have you. And you'll be doing some cooking for us. And but I'm curious about your story, because when I look you up online, mm-hmm. it says you're America's bean king. You're the bean king. But I also looked up and I found this interesting that you used to be a radio DJ in Italy. And I love that. I used to be a DJ in the 80s. You worked in clothing. Mm-hmm. And then you also self-published, is it called Jazzine?
A zine. Remember the era of zines? A zine on jazz. So
on jazz music, right?
Yes. It's very complicated, but yes, I did. It was pretty wild.
And you're also a singer, I read.
Yeah, well, now, yes, it's a hobby, but yes. Yeah.
So how does all that stuff, you become a bean king? How does that happen?
Well, first, I hate king. I bean enthusiast is good.
Okay, but you're a bean enthusiast. That's great.
I had worked for Esprit, the clothing company, in the early 80s. And I was young and I worked there probably 5 years, I think. Then moved to Italy. And in Italy, I was going to work for Esprit. And then I thought, I don't care about clothes. So I actually found a jazz station that played. It was Europe's only 24-hour jazz station. And I had a show called Mr. Lucky, where I would play jazz from the 50s and make cocktails on the air and pretend I was at a cocktail party. It was so stupid.
Oh, how fun. That sounds fun.
And then I came home thinking I would do radio. And then, of course, that's right when talk radio was starting. And they're like, no way. So I started doing bootleg tapes of the same kind of music. And the tapes led to a zine, and the zine got reviewed by Wired positively. And then the web was happening. So I became a web designer. I mean, I just had all these funny little quasi-entrepreneurial things along the way and never quite succeeded at anything. But I turned 40 and thought, you're a screw up. Just get a garden and get a job, maybe at Target. And that's the best you can hope for, which would be fine. But I just instinctually knew if I had a garden, I'd be okay. So I got the garden, and here we are 25 years later, and I run Rancho Gordo. So all those things that were irritating, I was able to use. So I think I learned branding from Esprit. I learned nerve from living in Italy. I learned to think on my feet from, you know, being on the radio. I learned you can run a business from a computer.
Right.
All those things. So they all added up. But I think it also helped, sorry, I'm rambling, but it really helped not having agriculture background or cooking background. Because instead of doing what the tradition was, I just did what made sense to me, which often was completely at odds with the way we grow food or cook. That's what I would say.
Rancho Gordo is the name of your company now, but
yeah.
That was the name of, is that what you named your garden when you first started a garden?
Well, no, I didn't know I would be doing it commercially. I just did it for me, for my own self-preservation. I thought, I'll just get a garden, and I didn't know how to garden.
Okay.
I thought, oh, well, why would you start the tomatoes inside? Let's just direct seed the tomato seeds. And it was luckily a year you could. And so I didn't know you were supposed to start them from starts, or I just thought, well, direct seeding makes more sense.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Why were you interested in gardening back then? Because it doesn't sound like someone who would be interested in gardening with your background.
Just my instincts told me if you had a garden. I lived in the country after living in the city for so many years, and I thought, no, a garden, it's going to be okay.
Was there a turning point, and what got you into heirloom beans particularly?
Well, I first started with heirloom tomatoes, and I really wanted to focus on tomatoes that would be from Mexico, which now I understand tomatoes probably started in Mesoamerica, but then the Italians bred them to become what or the Europeans bred them to become what we know as tomatoes today. So it was sort of a fool's errand looking for that. But I was growing heirloom tomatoes. I got really good at it, I thought. It turned out it was the weather in Napa. It wasn't me. I had no gifts as a farmer. But I was just selling the extras at the farmer's market. And having an heirloom tomato after having a store-bought hothouse tomato from Holland, even in August in Napa, that's what's available, it opened doors. I just couldn't believe how different they were, how delicious they were. They were harder to grow than early girls, but it was definitely worth the effort. And so I was selling them at the farmer's market. But here in Napa, things don't really ripen until probably late August or September. And I thought, I'll just do beans until the tomatoes ripen. And then I'll have something to sell at the farmer's market. And then once I grew beans, it's like, oh, you're an idiot. The beans are the story. No one is doing the beans. And it's a shame because they're so delicious and so diverse.
I'm so naive. So I had to, before I interviewed you, I had to look up heirloom to see exactly what that meant. I've heard of heirloom tomatoes, but I never heard of heirloom beans. And does heirloom just mean it's from seed to seed, passed down generations? Is that what it means?
Well, it's almost like the word antique. It's not really a great word because it could mean anything to a lot of people. But most people, it means it's open pollinated. So if you plant the seed, you'll get the same plant. It's not a hybrid. And generally, it would mean it was passed down and saved for its flavor and maybe the way it looks instead of the ease of harvesting or yield amount.
So how did you find an heirloom bean that you were interested in?
There were two groups, the Seed Savers Exchange and Native Seed Search out of Arizona. And they were just so beautiful. And I grew up in California loving beans. I thought, how do we not know what these things are? And I remember there was one bean in particular, Rio Zape, and cooking it and thinking, this is like the pintos I love, but there's a hint of chocolate and a hint of coffee. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is my goal, is that every home cook would get a pound of Rio Zape and know what to do. It's like, oh, good, I have Rio Zape, so I'm going to do this tonight. I've got a long way to go, but there are a lot of bean freaks that really love them. So it's working.
And I also read that you were at a farmer's market in 2003. Mm-hmm. And Thomas Keller, who's a famous chef, came up to you and that kind of changed the trajectory. Is that true?
Yes, it was very lonely. I couldn't get in to a local farmer's market. I had to be up at the worst one up in Yountville where French Laundry is. And he came up and started talking. And especially in 2003, I mean, not nobody, but literally, but it was almost impossible to find heirloom beans commercially grown. They really were something for specialty gardeners rather than commercial farmers. Nobody cared. People would come up to my stall and say, oh, I love nuts. Ooh, they're beans, yuck. And they thought they were candy and they were horrified to find out they were beans. But Keller came, he asked really intelligent questions. And I remember him leaning in and saying, what you're doing is really important. And I thought, oh, I think so too, but nobody else does because there just were almost no sales until then. And then he left and everybody flies coming on. Everybody wanted to know, what was the Keller bean? What did he choose? What did he ask? And from then on, I realized beans are a superfood and beans are really easy on the earth. In fact, they sometimes help it. But the way to sell this is going to be with people with good taste who can influence other people. And the word influencer wasn't really around in 2003. But my gut told me, again, I think that's the way to go, because I did find people who were into health really were very fickle and cheap at that point and weren't paying for extra stuff. They said they were. They really were paying for taste. And I think that's been a real key.
I don't hear any mention so far of Target fitting into this scheme anyway.
Luckily, no. And it turns out that actually wouldn't have been a good fit anyway. So yeah, no.
So you just went right to the gardening and it turned it into something.
Yes. It's such a stupid business idea to go into an heirloom bean business. I mean, it just makes no sense on paper, but I was having a great time. I love the farmers markets. It was a great sense of community. And there's something very powerful about putting a seed in the ground and following it throughout the season. And then at the end of the season, having something It's like, oh, I helped nature. You didn't help nature, but you feel like you did. And that it's very powerful.
Right. How big is your farm or garden now?
Well, now I just have a little test plot. Really early on, I realized in order to make any money and make a real business, I had no talent as a farmer. I was really good at the beginning of the season. And by the end, I was in tears. Like, this has to end. I can't keep doing this. So I actually went to professional growers almost immediately because I wasn't able to keep it up. But we work with about 15 farmers here on the West Coast, and most of the production is in the Central Valley. But then we started expanding to Mexico, but that's with small farms that really have no market in Mexico, and they're sort of thrilled that we have an interest in their beans. And those are actually more expensive. A lot of people think we only produce in Mexico, and we only produce there because it's cheaper, but it actually is more expensive. But it's really rewarding. I mean, I have a great time working with these farmers.
Right. And is that an organization that you started to work with farmers in Mexico?
Well, my business partners were helping me in Mexico, and their company was called Shishok. And I just felt they were such a key part of this. We just called it the Rancho Gordo Shishok Project, just casually. It's not an organization so much, but I just wanted to make sure they got credit so that I didn't want to, you know, steal it, so to speak, or take it over.
Are there a lot of heirloom farmers in Mexico, and how do you find them?
Well, that's the hard part. And, you know, when we started, they were in their 30s, let me be late 30s. And I was visiting them because they do another product. And I said, you know, are there any heirloom beans in your area? And they're like, oh, no, they're all gone. And then the mother said, no, there's one in the village. And so they turned into detectives, basically. And it turns out they're everywhere if you're looking. And much like here, they are taken for granted. And I think modern Mexicans really are okay going to Walmart or wherever they have to go in order to get their food. And there just is no room for heirlooms in that food system. But indigenous farmers mostly are very small, and each village has a regional bean. And they're still actually doing okay. Not great, but it's still a sustainable business practice. The problem is when we come in now, we need probably like 35,000 pounds of A variety each year. And for a small farm, it's a really huge task. So what's happening, and we've been doing this since 2008, they form cooperatives and all the neighbors will grow the same bean. And that's how we're getting quantities that we need.
Wow. So how many varieties of beans do you have?
We grow about 25 in the U.S. and import about 10, I'd say.
Wow.
Which would be a smarter business move and more efficient if we had fewer. But every time I have, like, I'll have one and think, oh, no, we have to have that. That's to get in here.
It's interesting because I've mentioned to you to a couple of people now that I realized that I was going to be interviewing you. And I can't believe how many people. I know a lot of vegetarian and vegan people, but they know about Rancho Gordo. And I think some of them actually order. You have like, is it like 26,000 people that order beans from you?
No, well, 70% of our business is direct to consumer on the internet. So it's huge. That's the main way we get people. I don't do farmers markets anymore. I mean, I would love to, but not really.
Yeah.
It's a hard life.
A lot of work. Yeah.
So one day, this was, I think, about 2010 or 11, a local winery was doing a wine club. And I thought, who needs another wine club? And God bless wine clubs. I mean, you should have a wine club if you want one. But to me, I thought, that's so funny. But you know, it's so stupid. Let's do a bean club. Let's like have a bean club kind of modeled on the wine club because no one's doing it. And so we started as a joke. Well, now there's 30,000 members who get quarterly shipments, and the wait list is close to 32,000 today. I mean, that varies. And that's 32,000 people who want to be in it. That's not 32,000 people with credit cards waiting. But it's a huge thing. But that's only part of what we do.
So if someone gets on that, it's like a wine list. They're going to get a variety of different beans every quarterly.
Quarter, yeah.
And you send them a variety of different beans. And these mostly individuals, or are they like commercial places as well?
Oh, no, it's all individuals.
Oh, wow.
We do sell it wholesale, but that's a different animal.
Right. So if I went into Whole Foods, would I be able to find heirloom beans?
No, not right. Well, regionally, you might. My thinking is part of not understanding this business was discovering the food distribution system. And I don't want any part of that. That seems very corrupt, maybe the way you get your food into a store. So we carry our own accounts. We do work with a distributor in a couple of places, but in order to expand, it means you're going to have to do like discounts and placement fees. And, you know, we're doing okay. I know.
Yeah, you're happy doing what you're doing. Yeah.
And can I get political a little bit?
You can.
Thank you. All right. My thinking is, so if we go into more Whole Foods, they're going to want like placement fees. And they call it free fills, where you fill it for free or you go on sales. And why does Whole Foods and Amazon get a discount to do something that is really resonates poorly with me? So they're welcome to put in an order and we'll fill it, but it's going to be full price and regular.
Right.
But you can't win every battle, but I think certain things you put your line, that's a line in the sand. So for me, it is.
No, I think you have to be authentic and you have to be true to yourself. And I think that's probably a huge part of your success.
I hope so. I make mistakes too, but yeah. But
are you maybe just a little bit human? I don't know. But
God, and I'm a king, right?
Yes. No. So do you have any like personal, like an individual personal story about one of the farmers in Mexico that has impacted you and made you like, you know, increase your passion for wanting to do this?
Well, there's a couple of them, and one was sort of a negative one. The Huasteca region is in northern Mexico. It goes between the coast of Veracruz, Hidalgo, and then San Luis Potosí. And it's, I think during the colonial times, a lot of indigenous people went up to escape. So the Huasteca is great. And it has its own culture, and often they'll consider themselves Huastecans rather than Mexicans. And we'd heard that there was this great heirloom bean grower when we were up there. So we heard he had just fabulous heirloom beans. So we're driving, we see his fields and they're really clean. And because sometimes with modern fields, you have to look, they use black water, which is really, you don't want to know what that is for irrigation, but it looked great. And so we're excited. And usually when we go into these things, the farmers will be very reticent about me because they see a fat gringo and think, I'm not going to make a good deal. This is going to be not good for me. So I don't want any part of it. But my partners are Mexican, so usually they go in first and then I come in later, if at all. But this time the guy's like beaming because he sees me and he's like, oh, I'm so excited to see you. And we're out in nowhere, not nowhere for them, but, you know, very remote part of Mexico. And we're saying, so what are you growing? We're all excited. And he's just beaming. And he says, I'm growing Michigan blacks. So he was growing heirloom varieties of his region. And now he's growing Michigan black beans, which were created to have, they're not an heirloom. So he somehow got the message, take out your indigenous beans and plant American beans, because that's where the future is. And I, at that point, remember thinking, this isn't just for the cute. So I get these fun road trips and get to meet people. It's like, we have an urgency to try and save as many beans as we can without, you know, and keep it realistic. So he doesn't know it, but it's a huge influence on what we're doing.
I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply.
Today, I'm in another great spot here at Rancho La Puerta. Rancho La Puerta has so many beautiful spots in nature, and this is one of them. I'm sitting in one of our hammocks, and we have several locations at the ranch where we have hammocks. This particular location, there's a beautiful lawn, there's oak trees, other trees. There, behind me here, there's a creek that runs when it rains in the spring and summer. So this is a beautiful, the wind, breeze, birds are singing. It's just beautiful. So we have up to 50 classes and activities a day for our guests. But guests also come here to relax and rejuvenate. And finding a nice quiet place in nature like this, sitting in a hammock, reading a book, taking a nap, meditating, just closing your eyes and listen to nature It's amazing. It's one of the magical things about the ranch. And I come here as often as I can.
I hope you are finding today's podcast informative and enjoyable. If you wish to learn more about our exciting presenters and programs, visit our events calendar on the Rancho La Pura website and see what's coming up in the future. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation. Now back to today's interview.
You can have an heirloom of any vegetable or any plant, right?
Yeah. Farmers want yield. That's their whole thing. And we're like, we want flavor. And I tell a story of one university that was doing bean trials, and they had spent 4 or 5 years. It was beans breed easily. But I think that's why they were doing it more than anything. But they were having a show off day, a trial day, and they said, oh, this field is pure white. This field, the beans are completely round. This field, they harvest really easily. And this one, they have this yield. And I asked in front of everybody, so how does it affect the flavor? And they were like deer in headlights. In the 4 years of the bean trial, they hadn't cooked one single pot of beans to know if anything affected the flavor. And I thought, well, then this is the crux of what our problem is and why I'll be in business for a while. Because for me, the flavor is more important than the yield. And commodity industrial beans do provide cheap protein and fiber, and they're a very healthy thing. And I'm not saying not to do those, but the real joy, if we can afford it, culturally and for every reason, biodiversity, is to do the heirlooms. And so that's what I'm more interested in.
And the number of followers that you have, it's quite obvious that people are super interested in what you're doing. It's almost cult-like.
I was going to say, we try not to use the word cult, but yeah.
In a good way, though, because Yes. What if people are looking for something more than just, I would think, beans.
Yes. And, you know, we've had some people try and copy us. And I think, well, it's not just buying heirloom beans or buying the experience of buying heirloom beans from the bean freak. I mean, I'd say bean freak more than bean king. So like, I am absolutely passionate about them. I mean, obviously I've been doing it now for 25 years. So it's the experience. And when we looked in the store, you know, essentially we have many consumers now. We don't really do marketing in the traditional sense, so I don't really know what our statistics are, but it's often an older woman will come through the front door and it's like, finally, something for me, because society has ignored her. She's not interested in Chinese sunglasses for Kim Kardashian style. She loves feeding her family and she understands the importance of beans. She loves cooking, and there just aren't a lot of places in modern society for her. And in fact, it feels like an uphill stream. And it's, you can just see it, almost relief when they come through the door. But then we also have now this whole slew of young people who don't have the same baggage with beans that older people do. Like, older people want to talk about gas. They want to talk about, they should be cheap. They're boring sometimes. But The young kids are like, oh my God, this is cheap protein. This is great. It's 50 cents a serving, even at our higher cost. It's great and it's fun. Young people really are rediscovering how to cook, and we're there to help them do that.
No, I think that's fantastic. Now, you've written more than one cookbook. The one that I read about is the bean book.
Yes, that's the last one, and that
that's an original title you have there.
Yeah, I do what I can. No, that's with 10 Speed Press, which is. I originally wrote a book with Chronicle Books in 2008 called Heirloom Beans. And then the publishing industry is also not that great. So I thought we'll just start publishing our own. And we have a following, so we can just do this. So we published many books. This is my seventh book. But this one was with 10 Speed, and it was a New York Times bestseller. And it really represents the whole, like, wow, beans have arrived. Because I was so lonely, and we were such a niche thing. And now, and not just because of us, but just because of times and us somewhat, it's a mainstream thing. And people know what beans are. Like you said, your friends know who Rancho Gordo is. It's not just beans. It's the Rancho Gordo thing.
I know people want more quality. So it's a step back for authenticity and quality and what's real, the truth.
Yes. And I think it's dangerous to market that, though. So I'm just doing what I do. I you know, they say the unexamined life isn't worth living. Well, I'll do that tomorrow. We're just doing it. And I literally write our newsletters in my computer myself. Like I find the email. We're a very small company in that sense. Like we don't have a PR person. We don't have a marketing team. Well, we do now a little bit, or just to coordinate things, but it's very unusual.
No, I did read that you wrote all your own newsletters from your own voice, which is, you know, in the world of AI, that's pretty great.
Well, I tried AI and it was like, I think I've got my job for a little while. We're okay. Couldn't do it.
So I also read that you have a bumper sticker on your car. Is this true that says every pot of victory?
Every pot of victory, yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, we were doing an introduction to Beam video. We do them all the time. But this one, as we're going through, I was explaining it and it just, you know, every pot is your victory. And I just said it out loud and I thought, it is, because even I still get a kick out of finishing a pot of beans. Like I still like, oh, I did it. I turned these rocks into something soft and delicious and wonderful. And they were rocks an hour ago or 2 hours ago. And so it is, it feels like a victory. And then my whole shtick now is you cook a pot of beans on Sunday and then you repurpose the pot throughout the week. So the first night, I don't think there's a better recipe than chopped white onion, a squeeze of lime, maybe some hot sauce and a bowl of beans. I mean, I don't know how you do better than that, but I understand not everybody's me. But the next night, say you make a rotisserie chicken and you have a salad. Well, put a scoop of those beans in the salad. And then you actually have the bones from the rotisserie chicken, make stock and beans and make soup. And you can just keep reinventing the pot. And even though I'm an omnivore, I almost insist everybody with heirlooms anyway, do a vegan version the first time, because you won't believe what a bean, onion and garlic, maybe a splash of olive oil and water will do. When it's just, you don't need anything else. Then it hurts me when people say, oh, I did them really simply. I just put a ham bone in it. It's like, you miss what was wonderful about the heirlooms. You have a ham dish to make.
Are there some myths about beans that you've heard that are myths that you think that?
Well, the salting is a huge myth, we think. You know, they say you shouldn't salt the beans until they're soft, but now people are even soaking them in salt water. You can salt early. I think it is a myth, but I also, you're spending an hour and a half to 2 hours making this thing. I would hate to find this is the one pot where the salt did stop it. But I think scientifically, there really isn't a problem. The problem you have is if you wait to salt until they're soft, you're probably going to have very bland beans and salty bean broth. But if you do it too early, the whole thing can become too salty because you, as it concentrates, you don't know. Mm-hmm. So I put my beans onto a very hard boil. And once they're really boiling hard for 5 or 10 minutes, sometimes 15, I turn it as low as they'll go and just let them gently cook. And there's a point when they stop smelling like the aromatics and they start smelling like beans. And that's really the point of no return. You're going to go all the way. That's when I salt.
Okay, so I grew up hearing that, you know, beans cause gas because of how you soak them or you cook them in the water you soak them in. Is that a myth as well?
Well, according to Harold McGee in his On Food and Cooking, I think that's what it's called. It's a great book that every home cook should have. He says that the amount of things that cause gas that you would remove by soaking, it's minimal, and that you also are removing potentially flavor and other nutrients. So I don't change the water. I don't even soak. I know where the beans are from. I know that ours are within 2 years, usually one. I don't bother soaking. But if I was buying them in a grocery store and didn't know the brand or they looked really dry and dark, I would definitely soak. And I probably would not still soak, change the water. But there are many roads to Rome, and in fact, all roads to get there. So if you have an Italian grandmother that says you have to soak and you have to change the water, go for it.
Do it, yeah.
I think eating more beans is the best way to deal with gas. Like if you...
Your body will adjust to that, right?
I mean, for most people. And also to air is human, so we don't know.
Right, whatever. That's true. Beans are touted as a great protein source, mm-hmm. but I also have, because I interview a lot of nutritionists as well, I've been told that certain plant-based proteins, you have to combine them with certain things to get the complete protein in your system. So with beans, if you combine it with like brown rice, you have a complete protein. So do you do that as well when you're cooking? And
yes. Well, I have to stress I'm not a nutritionist in any sense, but I think beans and corn tortillas would be the same thing. And so it's not just rice, but apparently that is the case. Something about amino acids, and I'm sure the listeners are all like chomping at the bit. No. They want to correct
us. Well, I think it's the buzzword in the last couple of years is protein. Everyone needs more protein.
Yes,
more protein.
They do.
It's what everyone talks about. So,
and then next week it's fiber. But the wild thing about beans is they're both.
They're both. Yeah.
Yes. And I had a friend who had diabetes, and her doctor said, "Oh, you can't eat beans; they're too carbohydrate rich." I said, that's insane. And she started eating more beans and her A1C started to go down. I mean, the levels. So that's not advice. You should always listen to your doctor, but doctors aren't always completely up on some of the stuff. But beans are protein and fiber and they're easy to grow. In the soil, they fix the nitrogen. So when you fertilize a field, you know, and grow the plants over winter, if it rains a lot, the water is going to leach all the nitrogen out of the soil. By having legumes like beans, you retain it. And then when we harvest them, even industrially, there's this big harvester that goes out there and the beans go in one area and the pods go in another. And the dry pods then hit a blade and they're chop, chop, chop. And they go right back into the soil as green manure. So even industrial beans, and also to get on another soapbox, I mean, you plant the beans in the spring, and you harvest them in the fall, and then we clean them. I mean, for a pound of beef, I mean, you have to first grow the food, and you have to make sure you have the water. And it takes, I think, 2 or 3 years to get the same pound of protein. So I think there's an argument for that right there.
There's no doubt that it's probably better for our world and our environment to be.
And at least incorporating it. Yeah. So maybe you can't go all vegan or vegetarian. Maybe you can incorporate it and eat a little less, is what I would say.
Do you think there's a philosophical or a meaning in what you're doing for you that makes you so passionate about it? Like biodiversity, is it like about, you know, changing how people perceive food and what they eat?
I'm a little superficial and I just love imposing my tastes on other people. And so here's the secret that you didn't know. And I'm going to tell you about this. The same thing with music. Like I love like Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and 50s jazz, even harder stuff. And when I was listening to some of the garbage that's on AM radio when I was growing up, it's like, oh my gosh, we could be listening to something so much better. So, and I think, you know, growing up gay, I didn't have a place in mainstream society. And then it's like, but it's kind of boring anyway. Let's create our own society. And I think being on the outskirts of the mainstream is always much more interesting for me than pushing fabric softener, because that's what sells. I mean, you can make millions in the fabric softener.
So sharing, having someone who suddenly realizes how great beans are, that makes you happy.
Oh,
and how great they can taste.
Or I just love too, they'll come back and explain to me what I had just explained to them 2 weeks earlier. Oh, all I did was I did this. And they're so excited. And it is this tiny little miracle that you can perform. And you can follow the instructions. You can do everything, but you actually learn how to cook a tiny bit, because there aren't, you know, how old were the beans? What kind of pot did you use? What is your water like? Is it heavy minerals? Or there's all these little variances that are going to change it just a tiny bit. And I say at the worst, it's just simmer till done. That's the most important thing to make beans. But there are these little variances that are super fun, and it turns, you become a better cook.
Yeah, that's great. So now, you'll be here August 1st for a week, and you'll be cooking over at our organic garden in our farm.
I can't wait. Yeah.
The ranch has been doing this wellness organic food for like 86 years. So what kind of things can our guests expect when you're here? What are you going to be cooking? I'm guessing beans.
Well, I would say beans first and foremost, but also how to reimagine the pot, like I say. And you know, I eat probably 80% from my garden, another 10% from the farmer's market, and then I have a few emergency things. So it's going to fit in perfectly for the way I cook as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I tend to be simpler you know, just especially as I get older, it's like, did I really need to add cheese to that? I always stop and think. And there are very few things that aren't better with the squeeze of lemon or lime at the end. So, and also I'm a product of California completely. So there definitely are Mexican influences, Asian influences, and just almost homesteader, although I'm not quite, but I love being self-sufficient. And I'm lately I've been big on my orchard and greens that are just kind of low maintenance. So it's going to be an optimum.
Do you personally have a favorite bean?
I do, but I can't say it in public because the others would feel horrible. But
oh, they would feel bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So Rio Zafe is one of them. But I mean, you have a mood. And so I really want a white bean and I really want to put pesto on it. And that is a great dinner right there. Or I'm going to puree it and make a soup or a dip. But then sometimes you want a dark bean. And then I love doing, you know, some sort of Mexican thing on a tostada. It goes all over the map. And then sometimes you want lentils. We just signed a book to do the follow-up to the bean book is going to be the lentil book, by the way.
All the rage now, too.
Yes. And we are importing one from, well, we're growing one in the Midwest that it's called Padrina. And it is the bean in Spain. And the grower was saying, no one wants them in the U.S. It's all for export to Spain. I'm like, oh, no, we want it. So we tried it. It's absolutely delicious. And it's sort of nutty. And the only problem with Spanish lentils, I will say, this is so weird, because lentils, you know, are for Lent. I mean, it's really considered, you know, sparse food. They put so much meat that it even, I can't deal with it. Like they love putting every mystery meat known to man inside it. And it's like, you lose what's so great about the lentil, which is so funny because the Spanish are so good with vegetables. It's one thing I don't understand, but
right. Yeah.
You didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you.
No. Well, we're super excited to have you here. Now, if one of our listeners today has never heard of Rancho Gordo or your heirloom beans, and they wanted to follow up, how could they find you before they came? So they could, besides you'll be on our website for sure. But yeah.
Yeah. And our website, ranchogordo.com, has been around. If you're really into it, the book is a great place to go, but we have Instagram and we have all the social media stuff, which I'm part of. But also if you're in California, come to Napa and come to our store now. Right on Main Street.
Right on Main Street. And what's the best wine to go with your beans?
Well, I don't. I don't care about wine. But don't tell
anyone. Okay. We won't tell anyone because you're in Napa. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm much more. Yeah, or the Valle de Guadalupe. I'm sort of interested to see what those will be, but we'll see.
Yeah, those are great too. Yeah.
I've heard that.
We're really looking forward to having you, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Anytime.
I know your busy schedule, and I'll look forward to meeting you in August for sure and having some beans.
All right.
I have to be honest, before my conversation with Steve today, I was not sure what an heirloom bean was. So it was an education for me today, and now I know for sure. Steve's passion about beans is infectious. It's no wonder his business is so successful. At 40, he discovered heirloom beans and started Rancho Gordo, the garden where he grows his beans. He was actually surprised at how much interest there is and how successful it's been. He has a waiting list of people to order beans on a monthly basis, and he's got 80,000 followers on Instagram. We're so excited to have Steve as our guest chef during our Nurturing Abundance Week, which begins August 1st. Steve will be joined by some other amazing presenters who will be presenting on different topics. Topics like regenerative agriculture, whole person health, and sustainable living at home and beyond. We're going to be exploring those topics and many more during that week. We hope to see you there. And I hope that you'll join me on another podcast before that time. Until then, wishing you health, daily joy, and a healthy helping of heirloom beans.